You are listening to WXRW LP Milwaukee 104.1 FM and RiverWestRadio.com globally. Archives of this show can be found at creamcitymedia.com/anti. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of The Anti, a weekly primer on freedom. The Anti is anti-authoritarian, anti-capitalist, anti-hierarchy, anti-sexist, anti-racist, anti-fascist, and more. If we are against so much, what do we stand for? Well, the ideals of freedom. In this series, we explore what a free society would look like while recognizing that none of us today are truly free. As ever, WXRW River West Radio needs your help. Times are tough for nonprofits, and especially so for nonprofits like us who seek to engage, educate, and activate the at-risk, the directly impacted, and the disenfranchised, while lifting the voices of marginalized people. If you want to help us out, donate today online. You can join our Patreon campaign. You can visit us in person at the station here at 824 East Center Street and buy yourself some gear and then wear that gear or use that gear. Or if you represent a local entity or business of some kind, please reach out to us and become an official underwriter. You can support us, and in so doing, we will make sure that everybody knows about the good work that you are doing in the neighborhood. To do so, you just need to go to riverwestradio.com, and then you are going to click on Support Us. There will be three links beneath that, the donation page. You can underwrite a show, and then there's also a page which will show all of our community partners with whom we are currently working, the people in the area that care about River West Radio, and they care about local radio, and they care about lifting local and marginalized voices and supporting the cause of local low-power FM radio. Okay, good afternoon. So, in this week's episode, we're going to touch on a few different topics, but all of them are going to be derived from the same, from one concept. And that is the concept of the direction of our modern discourse, of our popular discourse. What do I mean about the direction? Well, you'll often hear about the left versus the right, right? Left wing, right wing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's been the talking point. That's been the direction, or that's been the, I should say, the perspective of our contemporary discussion about the political and economic sphere. And the last new episode that was aired about socialism, we talked a little bit about kind of the axis of economic reality and political reality, and where those two are, they are related, but they are different. They are separate. Okay. So since before the First World War, there has been an aggressive, militant campaign of misinformation against progressive movements and largely against socialism in general. And you could say socialism and communism and really any progressive movement that seeks to actually empower the working class. That's really a gentle way of saying that those in power have spent their considerable wealth and resources ensuring that words like socialism and communism leave a dirty taste on the brains of the masses. Well, part of the goal of this show has been to change that. Part of the goal of this entire project and program has been to radicalize you. And I've said that over and over again. And I hope that that's not too scary. You know, the word radicalize obviously carries with it a lot of negative connotations because, boy, do we love our centrists. We love people who look fair and balanced and want to think that, oh, the solution to our problems is somewhere in the middle, right? Well, this episode is kind of going to talk about why that is not the case and some of the inherent dangers of centrism and why those come about and how they come about and potentially how we can combat that. To do that, we need to talk about the larger topic of this episode. The title of this episode is going to be called The Window. I was thinking of calling it something cheeky, like Rear Window in reference to the great Hitchcock film or something like that. But no, I'm just going to call it The Window. I was thinking of calling it like Through a Glass Darkly or something like that to, you know, pretend I'm smarter than I am and, you know, appear all literary. But we're not going to do that. We're just going to call it The Window, and it's going to be focused on the Overton window. So what the hell is the Overton window, actually? This term has recently emerged again in the popular consciousness, but its meaning is more subtle than many people ascribe to it. To most people who use the term, the Overton window refers simply to the acceptable limits of civil discourse in the political sphere, right? So when a lot of people use the term the Overton window, they're simply referring to how the rhetoric, you know, that political representatives are kind of allowed to use has changed very dramatically since 2016. Now, that's not even entirely true historically. The Overton window has kind of in that regard, in, you know, the way that people are using it there colloquially, it has budged back and forth and it's swung far and wide over the years. You know, in early electoral campaigns, hundreds of years ago, mudslinging and, you know, the kind of rhetoric that, you know, maybe in the election of our 2008 would have seemed barbaric, you know, would have seemed even worse than some of the propaganda that Trump was spewing for the 2016 election. But speaking of that election, that's the one that everyone really remembers as being kind of a watershed moment for when what they understand popularly as the Overton window shifted dramatically. And absolutely, you know, the tone of the rhetoric, the tone of the propaganda, and the tone of the language being used by Trump and his side, by the right in general, absolutely took a change. And it was so dramatic that a lot of people started talking about this phenomenon of the Overton window. And when they use it, they're talking about that, the acceptable limits of civil discourse in the political sphere. And colloquially, that is correct. You know, I'm not a linguistic prescriptivist. I'm a descriptivist. So if that's how people are using it, then they are absolutely right to use it in that manner. Semantically, there is more to it than that. It is more nuanced than that. Also called the window of discourse, it describes the tolerable range of policies which legislators may try to implement based on the public opinions of their constituents. The window describes cultural opinion, but then also that tolerable range of policies. So imagine in your head with me, you've got a spectrum. It goes from left to right. Okay. Imagine almost like the color spectrum, you know, the rainbow. On the left, you have socialism, and on the right, you have fascism. Okay. Now, of course, there are shades of color and gradation in this spectrum. Riding along this spectrum, like a push cart on railroad tracks, is the window of discourse, or often referred to as the Overton window. And inside that window itself has a left and a right side. And then it also has a center. The very center of that window wherever it rests on that spectrum, the center is policy. That is what exists in the reality of the world. That is the legislation, that's the laws, that's the social mores, that's the fabric of our culture. All right. The middle of the window of discourse is policy. Just a little bit to the left and to the right of what is really implemented, the stuff that's been done, those are things that are popular. So just scooching to the left and to the right of what is actually existent, our current state of affairs, those are things that are still popular among large portions of the population. To the right and left of popular, and you can see that we're getting farther away from actual policy and we're moving to the right and to the left, further away from what's popular, is what's considered by a lot of people to be sensible. Oh, sure, what would be a good example here? In our modern discourse, mass incarceration is seen as, or people are starting to think that it's not a great idea. So mass incarceration is policy. It exists. But as we start to move to the left, people are starting to see it maybe as sensible, but maybe they're starting to have problems with it. So then to the left and right of sensible, we've got acceptable. And then as we move further out, we get radical. And then as we move further out from that, we get completely unimaginable. Like you would never even think. So now you can see as the window rides along this spectrum and it carries along inside of it, cultural opinion and things that will be more or less acceptable and things that will be implemented in reality. If you move to the right, then more radical ideas start to become more acceptable, more sensible, more popular, and then they become policy. So there's really no perfectly scientific way to determine where the window of discourse is on the spectrum. But you can always get a sense of it by paying attention to public sentiment and, more importantly, policy change, because policy, anything that becomes policy, must have some acceptance generally. And there are always going to be contradictions, of course. There are going to be exceptions to that. But okay, so here are some questions you can ask yourself to get a sense of where the window is moving to. Do white supremacists feel comfortable demonstrating, out in public, in the street? Is the government repealing protections and welfare programs? Are wages stagnant or are they dropping? Is economic precarity on the rise? All of those things can be indicators that the window has been pushed to the right. And I phrase it that way very specifically. That bit is crucial to understand. The window does not move of its own accord. If I was going to try and be poetic about it, I could say that the tides do not come and go without the influence of the moon. The window of discourse must be purposefully moved. And it is usually done so through the use of propaganda and rhetoric and direct action. So looking back at those questions that we asked, do white supremacists feel comfortable? Is the government repealing protections? Are wages stagnant? Is economic precarity on the rise? Well, you can probably see that the answers to those are yes, yes, absolutely, and very much so. So that those are all indicators that the window is being pushed to the right. Now, the Overton window is a gauge of reality. Right. Although it can be moved and it needs to be moved, it is merely a representation of where we are at. We could ask the question, why is it moving to the right? And we can start pointing to how the rhetoric has changed recently in the political sphere. And we can see that that is potentially one of the causes, but that is more so a symptom. It is a symptom of a built-in function of of, yeah, I'm sorry, everybody, but it's capitalism again. But it's always going to be, because that is the system in which we currently exist. We live in a neoliberal capitalism. This is a way that I can talk about it. The window as it sits on this spectrum does not move in both directions equally. It is more difficult for it to move in one of those directions than it is to move in the other direction. And I want you to guess really quickly which direction it is more apt to move in, what direction it's easier to move in. Well, it should come as no surprise that it is easier to move the window to the right. And there's a very specific cause for that. And it's because of the relationship to the economic sphere with the political sphere. The political sphere does not exist in a vacuum. It must exist on the fabric of the economic sphere. And the economic sphere will always be, it will in itself likewise be adjusted by the political sphere. It's a dialectic. You know, read your Marx again. The political sphere and the economic sphere affect each other and are affected by each other. And obviously, you know, the cultural mores and folkways of a society push and pull both of those and are pushed and pulled likewise by them. But to understand why the Overton window moves easier in the right, towards the right, you must understand the inherent relationship between neoliberalism and capitalism and fascism, and how they relate or how they respond and react to socialism. Because don't forget, the left side of the spectrum on which the window rides is socialism, and the right side is fascism. So, why does the Overton window move easier towards the right? Think of it kind of like, what would be a good real world example? The fur of a pet. Think of it like the fur of a cat or a dog. You can run your hand very easily in the direction that the hairs lie, and you can run your hand in the opposite direction, and it is more difficult. And also, and this actually makes the metaphor pretty fun, it is less pleasant for the pet because it's more accustomed to having, you know, it feels better to have it move in the direction of least resistance, right? The direction of least resistance is maybe the best way that we can think about that. And I just struck upon it and I'm pretty proud of myself. Okay. So to understand why the window moves easier to the right, you must understand the relationship between neoliberalism and capitalism. Okay, so neoliberalism is the ideology that currently dominates all of the world. And we talked about it in one of the past episodes, and just for ease of use and for my understanding of what kind of stuff I've covered on this show, let's remember. Oh, it was the second episode. Wow, go all the way back. All the archives are available at creamcitymedia.com/anti. Go all the way down to the bottom of the page and you'll be able to listen to the episode on neoliberalism. That happened a long time ago. There is an inherent relationship between neoliberalism and capitalism, in as much as neoliberalism assumes capitalism. Neoliberalism does not allow for any other economic system besides capitalism because of the tenets of neoliberalism. So it absolutely abhors anything in the public sector, for example. Neoliberalism wants to privatize absolutely everything. Neoliberalism abhors anything that is based on anything larger than the individual. You know, obviously, Margaret Thatcher was famous as saying there is no such thing as society, there are only individuals. And she was a terrible person, and there are obviously such things as society, and there are such things as community, and there are such things as, you know, social relationships. And, you know, the rugged individualist tact of or stance of neoliberalism assumes capitalism, because capitalism assumes what's called, quote unquote, rational self-interest as being the most important motivator of society, which again is BS, but that's what it assumes. So there is an unbreakable, unshakable relationship between neoliberalism and capitalism. And neoliberalism is, again, the absolute dominating voice on the world stage from every single government across the entire globe at this point. And anything that contradicts that is shut down very, very quickly. And we have a very contemporary example of this. So Evo Morales, the president of Bolivia, recently had to step down, and there was essentially a coup. Why was there a coup? Well, neoliberalism, again, wants to maximize free markets, right? Mostly free markets for those who are already rich and in power to maintain their monopoly on, you know, their riches and their power. So Evo Morales nationalized the lithium. And lithium is a really big deal these days because it's in all of our batteries. It's in all of our car batteries. For example, the Tesla car battery relies very heavily on lithium. The batteries in your phones rely very heavily on lithium. So Evo Morales, a socialist president who was democratically elected, was nationalizing the lithium mines in Bolivia, which is one of the world's largest sources of lithium. He was also going to nationalize, or did nationalize, their gas reserves, and it was the third largest, I believe, in the world, gas reserves. So, there was recently a democratic election where he was elected again because the majority of the population who are indigenous love him because he finally gave them a seat at the table and stopped just murdering them en masse. And what happened? Well, there was a right-wing coup. He was overthrown. He's in exile currently. And now, oh look, Bolivia is friendly to foreign business interests. It's very interesting to see what happened to the stock of Tesla directly following the coup that overthrew the socialist president of Bolivia, why it shot through the roof. It blew up Tesla stock. I wonder why that might be. But anyway, that's an example of neoliberalism requiring free markets, and anything that gets in the way of the free market will be violently crushed. Okay. There is an inherent relationship between neoliberalism and capitalism, in as much as neoliberalism assumes capitalism. Okay, so what does that have to do with the Overton window? Why does that mean that it is easier for the Overton window to move right than it is for the Overton window to move left? Well, let's go back to the spectrum. The far left of the Overton window represents freedom. It represents socialism. It represents the kind of freedom that is not just reliant on free markets, but actual personal liberty. And not just the personal liberty that neoliberalism likes to tout as your freedom to choose where you spend your money. No, that's not actual freedom at all. And we'll talk more about that in further episodes. And we've already kind of talked about it, I believe, in previous episodes. But the left side of the spectrum that the window rides on is socialism. What does capitalism hate? You guessed it. Capitalism cannot abide socialism. The two are incompatible and they are directly at odds with one another. So, for that very simple reason, the Overton window will always move to the right easier than it will to the left, simply because fascism is compatible with capitalism, and socialism is not. Socialism stands in direct defiance to capitalism and vice versa. So, for example, any time that there is a policy that appears to be, or not even appears to be, anytime there's a policy that is proposed and then passed that will remove personal liberties, that will make it easier for white supremacy, for patriarchy, for exploitation. Anytime one of those policies comes up, so long as it does not infringe on the rights of the capitalist class to own the means of production, to seek profit, and to continue to open up new markets for free market neoliberal capitalism, it will do nothing to stand in the way of those policies, because those policies are beneficial to capitalism and the capitalist class in general. It needs to be said again, fascism is compatible with capitalism. Socialism is not compatible with capitalism. And one of the larger projects of this program, as I've said many times, has been to try and radicalize you. And that alone, that simple mathematical truth, that fascism is compatible with capitalism and vice versa, and neither of them are compatible with socialism, that should make it easier for you to see the benefits of socialism. How socialism is a system that is more natural and stands in opposition to fascism. Part of the goal of this program is to try and push the Overton window. I think the Overton window needs to be kicked in the ass. It needs to be moved radically to the left. I really need radically left watchwords to be on the minds and the mouths of my family and my friends and my coworkers and my community members. I need ideas to not only become part of the larger discussion, but to be largely recognized as positive and necessary ideas. All the ideas that we've talked about on this show, ideas like worker ownership, like prison abolition, like community defense, like common property, like direct democracy, and like emancipation. It is really, really important that we take back the conversation around these topics and redefine these terms in their truest forms, because there has been a persistent and violent propaganda campaign against these ideas, propagated by the people in power who want to remain in power. It's just that simple. Make no mistake. Right now, those who have positions of power and influence and wealth are using their substantial resources, all of their money and their riches and their weight, to move the window where they want it to go. And they are pushing it to the right, for the simple fact that the right is opposite of the left, and the left is socialism. And they cannot abide socialism because it threatens their power, and it threatens their wealth, and it threatens their way of life. They're used to having it their way. But here's the other thing. Socialism threatens the status quo, and the status quo is killing the planet. The super wealthy, for generations, have moved the window where they want it to go because they have had the power and they have had the influence. And if we do not take it upon ourselves to purposefully shove the window in the opposite direction, we may eventually lose the power to move it at all. So we're lucky that socialism is back in the public forum for the first time in a long time. There's been a groundswell of interest in left ideas, but the general public doesn't know what socialism really looks like or what democracy actually is, because the majority of media sources continue to spread a malicious and persistent campaign of misinformation and scaremongering. It's up to us to move the window, and I hope that you'll join me. Thanks for listening to The Anti here on WXRW River West Radio. I've been NTSC, your host, and I'll be back again next week to talk about further topics relating to freedom and our awesome shared potential. Listen to all the archives on creamcitymedia.com/anti and stick around here on River West Radio, WXRW 104.1 FM. There's more great stuff coming up. First, let's hear from Sandy and see what kind of cool things are going on in the neighborhood.